This is Digital Story Podcast number 769, December 15th, 2020. Today's theme is what to do about all of those digital photos. I'm Derek Story. Are digital photos pile up faster than leaves in autumn? And today's show is dedicated to getting them bagged up and organized. We're going to rake up this job from two angles, using common sense organizing techniques and a dash of artificial intelligence. I'm so glad you're here. I hope you enjoy the show. So I thought, okay, end of the year, we're kind of getting our act together, or trying to get our act together, right? In so many different ways. A lot of us are working on our homes, our apartments, our living spaces. We're trying to clean up some messes at work, get ready for what we hope to be an exciting and productive 2021. Now, one of the areas that always needs work for folks that listen to this podcast is our digital photo library. That's right, because, you know, the thing would be, if we'd stop taking pictures, we would stop adding to the problem, right? And what is that problem? Well, of course, that problem is what to do with all those digital photos. None of us are going to stop taking pictures, so we got to go about this a different way. So I have a guest to start out the show today. Her name is Isabel, and she's terrific, and she has some wonderful ideas about sort of getting your arms around your digital photo library and maybe how to approach it so that it works best for you. And I think that's the main thing, because there's no one right way to do this. It depends on what your needs are, how much time you have, what your priorities are, all that good stuff. And I think that is the place that Isabel is coming from. So let's turn it over to this conversation that she and I just recently had. And then when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about this free or affordable, depending on if you have $10 or not, AI organizing tool to also help us with this process. So we're going to have a little bit of Isabel, common sense, wisdom, and a little bit of machine learning. We're going to roll it all up, and hopefully we come out with a better handle on our digital photo library. Alrighty, here's Isabel. Isabel, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Derek. Hi. I have been an illustrator for most of my life, and I did this in San Francisco. I came back to New York in end of 2008, and I was kind of a disaster. And I realized I wanted to do something because I was doing less work in editorial illustration, and I just moved with all my photos, and I had to sort my photos, and I realized I needed to learn iPhoto to put things in order. So all my chaos, I kind of organized it. And then I did this for other people. And then I realized, well, this is kind of the same thing that I do with illustration, is I tell stories. I work with colors. I work with, you know, humor and shapes and this. And I'm like, this is fun to do. And how about if I do this with other people? And that's what I started to do. And that's what I do now.
Some of the things that you've learned, not only with your own photos, but, you know, working with other people, in terms of us not only organizing our photo library, but understanding our photo library, understanding what we have and, you know, what is important and maybe what isn't as important, but maybe we hang on to anyway. So let's start with just sort of understanding our photos, and then we'll talk a little bit about organizing them as well.
Sure. Okay. So it's interesting because things have changed so much. So now I could work with someone and their pictures starts from the 2000s, right? Some people had a digital camera right away. So I could have a family and their kids, they only have digital pictures. And then there's nothing printed. In the meantime, we have the iPhone. And the iPhone kind of changed everything, or Android, or any kind of phone that you have, which means that we use the phone as a notebook. And we use the phone very differently than the way we're using a digital camera. So we end up with so many photos that are, I would say, ephemeral, or photos we don't need for the future, and lots of screenshots. So when everything gets mixed up in one place, kind of creates problems. So we have a lot of junk photos that maybe we need to clean up. And then we have everything that is everyday moment and the big moments of our lives that we used to take a camera and do film with them. So we have a lot of things that maybe don't belong together, but we have the photos in chronological order. We need to do something about it. So I feel like once you understand that, you kind of realize, okay, I have 20 years of photos, maybe 15 years, maybe 10 years, but it's like life. It can be a big mess.
Yes, yes. we do need to do something. I think everyone agrees on that. But I like your point a lot in that we're just getting everything gets thrown into this cloud photo library. And I still shoot film as well as digital. And it's interesting. I've had a roll of 36 exposure film in one camera now for like a month. and I have two frames left. I'm very picky about what I shoot. And it's important things like family things or a family moment or something like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In that amount of time, the amount of time I've had that 36 exposure roll of film in my camera, I have shot hundreds of images with my iPhone, but probably there's only like 36 in there that I really need to keep in that same period of time, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I agree with you 100%. If we acknowledge that, then how do we get our head around, you know, sifting this all out?
My philosophy is like you want to keep pictures that you love, the pictures that are useful, and the pictures that are beautiful. If everything fits the bill, then it's a great pictures and it goes into the best pile, right? The thing is, how much time do you want to spend on that? And usually the first thing I do when I work with people, I looked and usually I work with people who have iPhones and it's very easy if they have the iCloud photo library, everything is, you have everything in one place, right? So I say, just type on your phone the number 20 and then what will come up with all the number of the pictures that you have taken in 2015, 2016, 2020, and then look at how much you have per year. Kind of the average is about 5,000. And I'm like, after 5,000, usually you have too much, right? It's going to take you a long time to go through 5,000 pictures. So then you have to decide how much time do I want to spend? And then one good thing would be saying, okay, how much do I want to show other people? And what are the most important photos that I'm going to keep for this year that maybe I want to share or send to other people? So when you have that number in, and it could be just 12 pictures. So you know the quote Ansel Adams said? It says 12 significant photographs in any one year is a good crop.
Absolutely.
You could think about it this way. Of course, you have more than 12 pictures, but the 12 most important pictures, if you just put them into one place, you'll see how much you have, and then you could take the best 12 and then multiply by 20. That will be a decent number. But if you multiply 5,000 photos every year, you have 100,000 photos, and you say, do my kids want to have this one day? Probably not, right? So you kind of want to see, what do I want to do this for with those pictures and for who, right? And that you get clearer about what you're going to do next.
Now, when you look back at your pictures and when you work with clients on their pictures, what tend to be the pictures in the end that they decide are most important to them? Have you noticed, you know, a trend that runs through most people on that?
Well, usually they will be pictures of your families or pictures of people that they love the most, right? And then after that, they will be the pictures that they maybe the trips and memories that maybe they want to print and put on the wall, right? And then after that, there's a whole bunch of pictures that sometimes they don't even remember and they don't matter. And I feel this process is a little bit like when you do email. Sometimes you just want to, people say you want to do email bankruptcy. Sometimes it's the same with photos. Because if you have, for example, screenshots, you can't remember them because you can't search by, you know, OCR. Sometimes you could just delete them all. Some people do that. I'm like, oh, maybe. Because usually when you have this and it's all in your photo, and then you don't want to see them. So you have to decide what you want at the end. So the clearer you are, the better.
What about this idea? I know I've been thinking about this, and I think about this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what about this idea of a holding tank? And let me give you a physical example. So if I clean out my garage, and you know we're actually going through this right now at my house. If I clean mm-hmm. out my garage, and there are things that I don't think that I need, I haven't looked at for a long time. And if I put them in a separate area as a holding area, and let's say that I let a period of time go by, let's say 1 year, and mm-hmm. if I haven't looked at any of those things in that period in 1 year, then I'm sort of feeling like I don't need those things, right? I'm just hanging on to them for, I don't know, just out of habit, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What if we did something like that with our photos, instead of just like throwing everything, you know, like as we go through and decide that we're going to get this under control, instead of just throwing everything away in the beginning that we think we don't need, what if we put them in a holding tank? And then if we don't go into that holding tank for a period of time, let's say a year, then we can safely throw them away. Have you ever thought about an idea like that?
You could. I mean, there's kind of two approaches with creating, and everybody has their own way of doing it. But as long as you have one way and it's consistent, that works. So if you, like, for example, you could do favorites. If you're in Lightroom, you could do stars. So you could say, I'm going to find my favorites and all the rest I could delete, or I could just delete and I only keep the favorites. So you kind of have to choose what's your comfort level. So there is always security photos. And if you're a mom, this is very difficult. If you have photos of your children, right? Or if you do portraits, it's really hard to delete photos of people. It's probably going to be easier if you delete the 100 pictures you've taken of the Grand Canyon.
It's interesting. I've been a photographer my whole life, and I have, you know, taken pictures that I thought were very artistic, and I went on these trips specifically for pictures, and I shot hundreds of photos and all that sort of stuff. But as I go through shots from the 1970s, 1980s, and so forth, the shots I want to keep are shots of people in my life, and I could not care about 300 shots of Mount Rainier that I took on a trip. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have one, maybe two, but I can't believe how many shots that I thought were going to be important just turn out not to be years later.
Right. So when you look back at your work, and then there are different ways to look back at your photos. Sometimes you see the evolution as you as a photographer, and then you realize, well, this was a mistake, or this was bad. And then it's good because you feel like, okay, now you have a different vision, and then you could actually make better choices. And then you realize it's okay to get rid of stuff, and it's going to make you feel a better photographer because you could use that time that you've been looking at your pictures and say, oh my God, I am so much better now. And then you don't have to hang on to all of that stuff.
I agree. And I think a lot of people listening would agree with that as well.
One thing I want to say is some people feel like they want to scan all the pictures. I'm talking here about prints. And then they want to throw out the pictures. And I say, well, maybe don't do this because at least you have a backup. And I don't want to tell people throw out the good pictures. Just throw out the bad pictures and scan the good pictures, but keep them.
And I advise the same thing because there's something magical about those prints. You don't need thousands
Absolutely.
Of them, but the ones that are very important to you, there's something magical about them. And a scan is a whole different animal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
What would be your ultimate goal? If you're a photos user, let's say you start this process or you refine this process, is it to so you don't have to buy more cloud storage? Is it to make it easier to find the pictures that you think are good? Is it just to have less clutter in your photos library? What would you say is really the ultimate goal? What are we going for here?
I'd like to eliminate all the clutter, the mistakes, because that creates visual friction, so you don't need to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to, whatever method you have to pick your best photos, have them in one place. So mm-hmm. they're really easy, kind of like a little portfolio or the best of. what's hard for people, I feel like, is to work with the 70% that is in between, that it's kind of is okay. It's not great. You could decide to get rid of it, or you could decide, well, I can use this and learn from it. I could keep them. It would depend on your comfort level.
A new tool that has come into play for us that is helpful with this process is, of course, using machine learning or artificial intelligence to help us find our photos. And Photos, has the application has really been evolving in this area. So now if I enter the word ocean in search, it finds many, many of shots of mine that have an ocean in them or water in them, and it works amazingly well. The reason why I ask you this is, you know, what is your feeling as we move forward about keywording and some of the more laborious ways to find our photos that we do decide want to keep? You know, what's kind of right now, what do you recommend that we think about for those photos that we want to keep and be able to find?
Yes. Okay. So if you're using an iPhone, then you have all the locations. So you could just type a location. So we don't have to type, you don't have to put the location in the keyword. You can find ocean, you could find all different things, type of things. But in the long run, it's limited because the computer can learn things that it's easy to recognize, right? You could find food that's general enough, but you could find the stuff. There's maybe a lot of false positive, but artificial intelligence cannot recognize what, for example, for you is work. What are the reference pictures? Actually, you could find documents. So anybody with an iPhone, they always take documents. Just type documents and you'll see everything come up.
Oh, that's nice.
Then you make an album for that. People have thousands and thousands of documents. This is the best trick, you know. And then you make an album and then you go through them. Because it's much easier to go through all your documents at once rather than do a little bit at a time when it's all scattered. Like, for example, my clients, sometimes they have small business and Apple cannot find what is work for you. So you have to determine. So if somebody is a dancer, we could find all the dancing pictures and then you could tag them and that will be work at the same time as dancing. So use artificial intelligence to start the process and then keyword only what you need. But you can start with artificial intelligence to put your keywords.
That is helpful though, because, you know, before we had to keyword everything, we would have to keyword ocean.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. We would have to keyword.
Yeah. And that's very tedious and monotonous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now you really only think about tagging and keywords for those specific things, like you said, like work, things that the computer can't recognize.
Yes. For example, you know, people have dogs and then the first dog is you can find dogs, but you cannot find your dog. So you use the dog and then you find yours and you tag your dog, for example.
Yes. Right. Perfect. Perfect. What haven't I asked you that I should have asked you in terms of all this that we're talking about?
Okay. So when I work with people, they tell me, oh, I have to organize my photo, help me. And I said, you're only going to do it yourself if you have fun doing it. The way they have fun doing it is understanding the software and understanding how photos work. You know, how to put a keyword, how to do smart album, all that stuff. So usually I spend a little time working with people and say, this is what you can do. And then you do this and this and this, for example. So once they understand what they can do, then they have fun and then it becomes easy and then they do it. So you want the photos that you take to be a source of joy, but not burden. I mean, I feel people that are overwhelmed. I'm like, let's spend a little time learning about the software, any type of software that you're using. And then you'll see that after that, it'll be much easier.
When you work with people, do you find that you a lot of times are following the same process with people, or is everyone really different, just like their photos are different, and you really have to listen to them for a little bit before you can figure out the best path forward? How individualized is that process?
My ultimate goal is that they do it themselves and they're happy doing it and they learn things that are not written on the Apple website or anything. So I give them tips and tricks, and really I teach them how to do it fast with shortcuts. And then, for example, using the quick, for the keyword, there's a quick way to do it with just one letter. When they know how to do that, they are going to do it because it's fast, right? So I really try to give them what they need. I don't want to overwhelm people with information they might not use. And then, well, usually people have the same kind of problems, you know, and usually it's mostly their family photo, their art pictures, and then the work pictures and reference. So we kind of work, what do they want to do? And then I help them accomplish what they want to do. Sometimes I end up doing it for them because it could be very tedious. And also what I do is I teach them how to see. And something, this is key for people, because sometimes they tell me I take 20 photos because they see photographer doing this, but they don't know that photographers look at the photos, you know, this is behind the scene, and they really look at each photo and compare and contrast to find the best one. For some people, this is very difficult. And it took me a long time to do that, to realize that I need to teach people how to see, not just look at the pictures, but how to see. Mm-hmm. So this I love to teach people.
Yeah, that's so important. Can you do this remotely? So could you have, you know, like you're in New York, if someone was in Wichita, is this something that can be done remotely?
So I used not to do this. I used to go and meet people, and now I do this with Zoom, and it works actually really great because I am looking at their computer. I could show my computer and I could remote in and say, well, do this and do this, and show them taking over the mouse. So it works great.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And so if people want to get a hold of you or see some of your blog posts or all that, where should they go?
So my website is isabelledervaux.com, and my email is isabelle@isabelledervaux.com. So it's easy. Once you find my website, you'll find me.
Okay. And that's DERVAUX, right?
Correct. Yes.
Correct. This has been delightful and really helpful. I really appreciate you taking time.
Thank you so much for having me, Derek. And I'm looking forward to your next podcast.
So I want to mention that I have the link to Isabelle's website in the show notes. And by the way, her last name is DERVAUX, and I have the link to her site. And one of the things that you'll see on her site, and I actually put a link to it in the show notes, is that she will provide a free 20-minute phone consultation. So if you want to chat with her just a bit, maybe have a few follow-up questions for her, talk a little bit more about this, click on that link in the show notes. It'll take you right to the place where you can sign up and talk to Isabelle directly. She is lovely, she is smart, and she can help us get our arms around this challenge of so many digital photos. Thanks so much, Isabelle, for being on the show. Cull AI is a free or affordable AI organizing tool for Mac photographers. So now we're going to talk about a different aspect of organizing our images using artificial intelligence. I actually ran across this article on Petapixel, and it's titled Cull AI is a free artificial intelligence culling tool for the Mac. And I was really quite interested in the piece. I read the whole thing, and then I went over and took a look at the software, read their page, and said, you know what? I'm fascinated by this, so I downloaded it and I started testing it. So the first test I did was on just 50 images because the free version limits you to 50 images. Now, if you spend $10 on this app, which in this world of this type of application is a bargain, I think, then you have unlimited amount of images you can work on. But I started out with just the 50 and I liked it. I thought the software worked really well. I was interested in it. Now, it's best for shoots that have a lot of people in them because it's really a tool for recognizing people for the best shots. So, for instance, I put a portrait shoot in there. And so I would have 8 or 10 or 12 frames of basically the same pose. And then it picks out the best one of that 8 or 12, kind of collapses the other ones into a stack. I can still see them. They're grouped together. And then puts a star by the one that it thinks is the best shot. And I'm kind of going through these, going through these, going through these. And I'm going, that's pretty good. That is pretty good. A lot of the times, most of the time, I agreed with that. So I was thinking, okay, if you have thousands and thousands of photos, people photos, and you just kind of want to identify the ones that are best without having to go through thousands of these, you can do that with this app, because then all you do is export that shoot, you know, that collection, whatever that happens to be, and it just exports the star ratings, right? Just the ones that it has identified. So you can go from 500 images with all these people, let's say it's a wedding, you can go 500 images of all these people down to 50, and then just have those 50. And then either throw away the other ones or put them on a hard drive or put them on a CD, whatever you do, right? Whatever you do with them. Now, it has ways to either loosen the results or tighten the results, right? So you can, instead of 50, you can have 75, or you can have 25, depending on the sliders that you use for the various parameters of this application. So it works out really well. It's very easy to use. It's relatively fast. And this is software that I can tell is only going to get better. It's only going to get better. This is like the first version. This is the most basic thing. And it is going to add features. I can just feel it. I can just, some, you know, you get a nose for these things when you've been doing this as long as I have. It's helpful for large collections of images of people. And that's its focus. One of my tests, after I spent the $10 so I could do whatever I wanted, one of my tests was to take a card, an SD card, that had a 450 frame photo shoot on it that I did for a client. And I hang on to these SD cards, some of these SD cards, for specific tests like this. And it actually read off the card. I didn't even have to load the images from the card onto my computer. It just ran right off the card. It picked, I think on this one, I ended up picking about 40 shots. It picked 40 shots, and then I exported those 40 shots onto my hard drive. I never had to load the whole shoot from the SD card onto my computer, just the 40 shots that it picked. And it was at full resolution. The 40 shots are at full resolution that it picked. So this is a fun app. Now, I have the link to it. Unfortunately, right now, it's only for the Mac. But I have the link to it in the show notes. I have a link both to the article on Petapixel, which is interesting, and then I have the link to it, Cull, A-I, C-U-L-L-A-I. I have the link to it on the Mac App Store. I think this can be a tool that's very helpful for when you have a large family gathering, a wedding, birthday party, all that kind of stuff, portrait shoot, and you really don't have time to go through every image and do all this stuff. It uses artificial intelligence to pick the best shots. And then you can just either store the rest or do whatever you want. Put the best shots in your Photos library or in your Lightroom library and move on. The new donation kit for carefree shipping of found film cameras getting to the end of the year. If you've been sitting on a film camera, or if you just discovered one, finally got that deep into your closet, right? In the very back, that you would like to donate to the Film Camera Shop that helps support this podcast, and it helps support the work of analog film photographers. I take these cameras, I clean them up, I get them working well, I test them, and then I get them into the hands of film photographers and aspiring film photographers at a very reasonable price. And it's a camera they can trust, unlike other sources where you get what you get. That's not the case with me. What you get is a great camera, and that's thanks to you many times. If you're interested in donating a film camera to this cause, or a lens, you know, an analog lens, or a very nice accessory, all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form. There's an option there for donating a camera. Let me know what you have, and then we'll take it from there. And I also have the link directly to the contact form in the show notes. Those of you who have recently donated, thank you so much. It really does help, and it really does make people happy. I get notes all the time from folks that are so excited about getting their first film camera or finally getting the film camera that they've wanted. It is a win, win, win all the way around, and I thank you so much for your help. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club business right now. And of course, we've got to start out with thanking our Inner Circle members. Inner Circle members, those of you that have been supporting us for this past year, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your confidence in what we're doing here and your willingness to help us keep doing it. I'm working on a post right now that sort of rolls up a lot of the benefits that I've offered over the course of the year, with links to them and so forth, so that you'll have one post that has, for instance, the link to digitizing family memories or video conferencing or whatever it happens to be. And then I'll also talk about some of the nice things that are coming down the pike for all of us in 2021. I thought it'd be good to have a post where you just have everything right there in case you miss something during the course of the year and you're feeling, you know what, I would like to get better at video conferencing. I'd like to download that training that Derek is offering to me. There it'll be right there. So look for that. I hope to have that coming to you in the next week. Certainly by the end of the year, you will have that roll up of 2020, all the benefits that are available to you. And I know you don't do it for the benefits. I know you do it because you believe in what we're doing here, but I appreciate it so much. I want you to take advantage of the benefits as well. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the Digital Story, our Patreon tile. Look for Patreon tile. Click on it, take a look at the site, and then hopefully you will be motivated to join us. And let's get 2021 off to a great start, and let's get things done this next year. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. Yet another year of supporting this podcast, of supporting the world of printing, and just making the world a bit more artistic. Thank you very much, Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story where you can go find out about printing paper, find out about tutorials, reviews, get ink. If you're thinking about getting more serious about your inkjet printing, then these are the folks that you want at your side, Red River Paper. They also have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. We thank them so much for their support of our show, and we also thank them for making great products to make us as artists look so good. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more things for next week. In the meantime, be creative, maybe get organized, stay safe, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.